just heard the beginning of one of the most ambitious radio projects ever undertaken. The 52-hour History of Rock and Roll. More than 3 years of work, thousands of miles of tape, hundreds of pages of script, and countless interviews with the men and women who made the music. It all comes together in a unique radio spectacular. This is the story of the making of that show, in the words of the people who put it together. It all started in 1968 with one man's idea, radio programmer Bill Drake.
It originally came about, we had switched the station in New York to rock, and we had used a lot of oldies there to supplement the format. And then one night at the house, there were a lot of people up there, and we were just listening to old hit records and that type of thing, and just sitting around and talking about them, a lot of people in the business. And in listening to the old record, I commented, I said, you know, it's really a strange thing that as powerful as this business is, as much influence as it has over all our lives, that it's really strange that nobody has really told the story of all this. I said, it would be interesting one day to really document the history of rock and roll music. The idea was that people who are interested because it happens to be their personal preference of music, or whether they are just interested intellectually, either way, the main thing is that whoever is interested in it, just trying to tell the story as it occurred chronologically, as far as what caused what, how did it come about, what happened here that caused that, which then influenced something else later.
Drake was in a unique position to undertake the project. From his beginnings in small-town radio in Georgia, he'd risen to the top, pioneering rock and roll on such stations as KHJ in Los Angeles, KFRC in San Francisco, and WRKO in Boston. As the nation's leading radio consultant, Drake himself had done a great deal to foster the growth of rock and roll. With this background and the strength of his programming company behind him, Drake set the guidelines for the history.
I don't want to try to educate people. I don't want to try to preach to them. Inform them, yes. Tell the stories behind it, yes. But stand on the soapbox and preach and have an editorial viewpoint or all of that, no. The key is to present the thing that interests them, and the music itself had to be the vehicle that carried it all. And then we tell a story behind that, but keep that at a minimum. Information, yes. Preaching, no.
Drake set out to accomplish all this in a way that hadn't been done before. Rather than writing about the music, he wanted to produce an audio document. So in 1969, Bill Drake produced a 48-hour special, The History of Rock and Roll. It was a blockbuster, reaching millions of people through the hundreds of radio stations around the world that aired it. But as time went by, rock changed. Many new trends came on the scene. And in 1974, he decided the entire program needed to be reevaluated, rewritten, and reproduced to reflect the further growth of rock and roll. This time, it would take 52 hours to tell the story. The goal of the history was as much as possible to let the music speak for itself with the help of comments from the writers, artists, and producers who made it. One good example of this is the story of Riders on the Storm, told by one of the Doors, Ray Manzarek.
He wasn't necessarily a happy person, necessarily a moody person or maudlin person. He had those sides of his personality, various facets of Jim Morrison, and everything he wrote was what came right out of his soul. Riders on the Storm is the last song that Jim Morrison ever sang. That was the last one we completed, the last one he did vocals for, last song on the album, and about a week after he finished his vocals on that song, he split for Paris and said, hey, listen, I'm going to go to Paris. You guys finish up the mixes and everything. And we said, okay, man, see you later. Go have a good time and, you know, stay in touch. And whenever you're ready to come back after your vacation or whatever, come on back and, you know, we'll take it from there. And that was the last I ever saw of Jim Morrison.
Riders on the Storm.
In the course of producing The History of Rock and Roll, hundreds of rock personalities were interviewed. The job of editing those interviews for use in the history was a very exacting one. One example, the interview with Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys.
Brian Wilson is unfortunately a human being who responds to fear and love and things like that. I tend to also respond to psychological conditions, and these conditions are brought upon by myself. And I said to myself, well, today I'm going to grind one out. Okay, get behind that piano and grind a song out. And believe me, it works. You can grind these things out. You can force yourself to do it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, go!
Round, round, get around, I get around. Yeah, get around, round, round, I get around. I get around.
Sometimes interviews would suggest interesting effects when used with certain pieces of music. Making it all work right was the job of production director Mark Ford.
I like to take an interview and carefully edit it so that it works well from a production sense, being careful never to change the content of the interview. In other words, rearrange the artist's thoughts. We want to keep it, you know, straight, just as they had recorded it. Diana Ross had an interview preceding the hit You Can't Hurry Love, where she had actually imitated the beat of this record by going boom, 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 boom. So I tried mixing it, and I said, hey, this might work pretty well. So I put it over the start of the record, and it sounded like this.
This one started off with a bass, a quality of making a nice, different kind of intro that sounded good on the radio. Boom, 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 boom. I need love, love, to ease my mind.
Now, simply, it was out of synchronization. She had gone too quickly. So by editing in eensy-weensy bits of tape, a technical term, you know, about a quarter of an inch of tape between some of her boom, boom, booms, I synchronized it with the beat of the record and remixed it, and I thought the production effect was much better.
This one started off with a bass, a quality of making a nice, different kind of intro that sounded good on the radio. Boom, 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 boom.
Mark also created all the music montages used in the history.
First of all, of course, assess the potential songs that you can use. Usually you've got, you know, maybe 200 titles that you could use for a montage, and you're going to play perhaps 15 of them. So then you're thinking about the number one song, first of all, should start logically. I mean, it should start with the title, and it shouldn't sound as if you ripped it out of the middle of some song. So using 1974 as an example, we look through all the potential songs and find that Lonely People by America has got a nice long instrumental lead-in, if you care to use that to narrate over, and it also starts with the title of the song. So we'll get into that one and then worry about getting out of it in a minute.
This is for all the lonely people, thinking that life has passed them by.
Okay, thinking now that we'd like to perhaps maintain this tempo, in my head I know that there are several possibilities, but there's one with an intriguing drum start. This is the way the drums start.
Help me, I think I'm falling in love again.
Now, if I can find the right place to put those drums over the end of America, we might come up with a real good segue. So after finally hit the right way to do it, and this is the way that segue then sounded.
This is for all the lonely people, thinking that life has passed them by. Help me, I think I'm falling.
So that's the overlap method of going from one song to another. You can't always use it, but it's generally more effective than using a razor blade, just going chop, chop, you know, from one song to another. So, coming out of Joni Mitchell, we can do anything we want, really. We find one that's got a nice drum crescendo that we can overlap again slightly and proceed with a montage.
This is for all the lonely people, thinking that life has passed them by.
Okay, that's kind of a how-to on how we build montages. By the way, each bit of music is first transmitted to a tape deck. You couldn't come off a turntable, I don't think, very easily and put all these bits together. So you use three tape decks. One is a mastering machine, and the other two machines are record playback sources. You put each element on alternating tape decks and just marry them together, so to speak.
Sometimes special backgrounds had to be edited together from many different records. Again, Mark Ford.
There are many ways to create production effects. You can actually become, you know, your own arranger. You might have to accomplish this by varying the speeds of certain pieces of music so that the rhythm of one will match the rhythm of the other or the key or whatever. For example, here's a nice piece of rock music, just a guitar. Listen. Okay, we say, that's fine, but we want it to be a little more dynamic. We want to find, let's say, a drum background to go with it. That's the perfect guitar, but we need something else. So you do a search and you find this set of drums. So you synchronize them together and you wind up with something like this. Or you take the same guitar and you don't need to synchronize the drums with it, but you just want to have something to emphasize the start. So you can do it like this. Or you find a piece of music that doesn't have what we call a cold start. I mean, a beginning that is dramatic. In order to get into it, you'd have to fade it up. And which is, to me, that's a cheapo way to do production. You want to get into it cold. The thing will start logically and end logically. You don't fade out in the middle of a phrase. You don't take the phrase, shave and haircut, two bits, and cut it off before you get the two bits out, you know. So here's a nice piece of music by Donna Summer. Beautiful Moog work, and but you don't want to fade it up, so you look for a hard start. So you find a little drum beat like this, and it will start now sounding like this. Which I think is much more impressive, you know, than fading it up. It shows that you spend some time to do it. You can do amazing things. For example, here's a nice drum track, and it's pretty impressive. But if you let it play for a long time, it sounds kind of shallow, and you might want to have something else occur in it. So we look in the same album from which we got this this rhythm track, and we find a musical track further in on the album. But trying to synchronize the two together, we find they don't match. One is a little quicker than the other. So you adjust the speed on either one until they both synchronize. And that takes a little time, but you'll develop systems to do it. So we put them together, and then it sounds like this. Okay, we've built a pretty nice piece of music here using a Moog rhythm track and a Moog music track. We have one more step to accomplish, and that is to get out of this somehow and get into a piece of music. We want to start a music montage. One of the steps we accomplished before putting these two pieces of Moog music together was to synchronize both of them to the introduction of a hit record. And we'll get into that hit record like this. For the Silver Anniversary edition of the History of Rock and Roll, I worked closely with executive producer Bill Watson.
What we wanted to do, basically, was update the existing classic show. In other words, since its last release in early 1978, a lot of artists emerged or re-emerged that needed additional time and space, but we did want the show to remain 52 hours long. So to make room for the brand new hours that we wanted to add, we thought the best thing to do was to abbreviate or capsulize many of the very early birth of rock hours. Now, none of the early history was omitted or left out. It's just that we covered the facts in a briefer way and also used a more extensive montage approach to cover the music by a given pioneer artist instead of playing all of those records all the way through. So this allowed us to add the new hours later in the show for artists like the Spinners, Dionne Warwick, Barry Manilow, Chicago, Diana Ross, Michael Jackson, Doobie Brothers, Billy Joel, and others. A lot of the hours remained just as they were, you know, like a theme hour based on the 60s, for instance. I mean, nothing really changed there. But the other remaining hours have all been updated to include music and stars of 1978, 1979, and 80. So it's basically the same classic special, but the Silver Anniversary edition has been brought right up to date. As scripts were completed and approved by Bill Drake, Mark and I went into the studio with Bill and recorded the narration.
I'm ready if you are.
We're rolling.
Okay. In the spring of 1970, shortly after the release of The Long and Winding Road, Paul McCartney stunned Beatle fans. He announced that he was quitting the group, and a few weeks later, the Beatles officially broke up. Okay.
Joe, when you're ready, Bill.
It's no longer possible to say anything meaningful about the Beatles with a drawing.
Later, that narration was mixed with all the other elements into the dramatic close of the hour profiling the last years of the Beatles.
In the spring of 1970, shortly after the release of The Long and Winding Road, Paul McCartney stunned Beatle fans. He announced that he was quitting the group, and a few weeks later, the Beatles officially broke up. It's no longer possible to say anything meaningful about the Beatles with a dry third-person narrative. Imagination, first, best, taste, international significance, success. Those are some of the easy words. Between January 1964 and May 1970, the Beatles racked up more than 60 hits, over half of which climbed into the top 10. 20 of their songs reached number one, an unprecedented achievement in the recording industry. Worldwide, the Beatles have sold more than 85 million albums and 120 million singles. The key to the Beatles was and always will be their incredible music, which sounds as fresh, relevant, and exciting today as it did the day it was recorded. Leader and founder, John Lennon.
Most people enjoyed the Beatles and still enjoy it either separately, together, or whatever form it is. And mostly we get love. There's a few people that hate what we did or what they think we did. But in general, we get love, and I appreciate it, you know? I had fun doing it.
The Beatles. They've been heralded, adored, criticized, banned, and condemned. But most of all, loved.
After each hour of the history was mixed, it was re-evaluated. Again, Bill Drake.
It's one thing, an idea or a thought in the head, and it's something else when somebody tries to put that thought on paper, and it's something else when you try to take something that may look great on paper and have it come out as far as hearing it. You're talking about a lot of different variables, and they all have to be compensated for. I mean, you can write anything you want on paper, but the end result in music and in radio is what comes out and goes into your ear. It's not something that you read. It's a thing of a total involvement, thing of the effect of the sound of it all coming out. And no matter what you've gone through at that point, the key has to be a totally unbiased attitude, whether I have done it, whether I have rewritten it, or whether I have voiced it or anything else. Does it sound right? And whether it's something that I did or whether it's something somebody else did, if it doesn't sound right, it's back to the drawing board.
But the history's not over. There's more to come. A final word from Bill Drake.
It'll go on. I mean, as we talk right now, or as that show ends, 52 hours, then, you know, there's going to be five hits before the thing ever gets on the air. And it will go on, and it will go on, and it will go through transitions and changes and fluctuations and all kinds of different flavors of that. And that's the nice thing about it, is there is no ending to it. And it will continue to be added to and depicted as long as the public relates to it.
You've been listening to the story of the making of the history of rock and roll, a labor of love by the people who put that show together. Thanks for listening.